Our first talk will be held by Leo from Waipu. He is an engineer mainly working with Golang and programming their video streaming. So now welcome him on the stage. Give him a big round of applause. See you later.
Hello, hello. Oh yeah, I can hear myself. Good, great. Ooh, blood is pumping, but cool. A lot of people left, so I'm a little bit less nervous now. Great. All right, so I am here to talk to you about our VPN. And who are we in this our VPN? We are Exaring. We are the company behind Waipu TV, which you may have heard of. We do video streaming, live TV mostly, and VOD, and some other stuff, so other interesting stuff. And who am I? In case you're interested, I'm Leo. I am a gopher, so I program a lot of Golang. I'm an infrastructure lead at Waipu, and I am not a networking person, so go easy on me. So why build a CDN? The first thing that you should ask yourself is why the hell you want to do that. And we ask ourselves the same thing. First important point is that video for us is our core business, so of course, the CDN, so how the video actually gets to the customer, is a very important thing to us and is something that is front and center on the day-to-day work that we do. So it's obviously that is going to get a lot of attention from the whole company. And then you ask, you ask yourself the question, you're tasked with this task of delivering video to customers. The first thing, you stand there in front of a computer and ask, OK, can I buy this, maybe? And video streaming is probably one of the few markets nowadays, or one of the few areas nowadays, where it doesn't really make sense to buy it, because it's really prohibitively expensive if you want to buy it from the local hyperscaler of choice around the corner. So that's the first thing that should scare you off a bit. But there are other reasons we're going to get into later. But this is like the big elephant in the room. And then you start to think a bit more about it, and you notice that the current protocols for doing video online, you may not never have heard of them, but HLS and Dash are the ones that are being used basically everywhere. They're very HTTP friendly. So at that point, the latest, when tasked with that task of building a CDN, you should be asking yourself, OK, I can buy it, but it's just HTTP, right? So can I just not put Nginx in front of it? And we did that, and it worked for multiple years, kind of. And to understand that kind of, you have to like take a little step back and see what's going on, what are we actually working with, not just video, but what kind of video exactly. Our traffic is 90% live TV. And how does live TV work? Just a very high-level overview. You have this wonderfully vintage television client accessing a network that is there for the scaling, that CDN in turn gets content from the so-called origin server. That's a very video-specific term. I had never heard this name before starting to work with video 6 years ago, so you probably never heard of it either. But that's basically the place where the single source of truth for your video content, where it's actually coming from and has to be delivered to all the clients accessing it. And from the other side, it gets kind of pushed into this origin server from ingest. So basically, the content from your television channels that is ingested into our network and lands in a place that then can be spread around the internet. So what was missing in the setup that we had the first few years? The first thing is maintainability. It grew fast. It grew well enough to deliver our first million of customers. But it wasn't easy to deal with. So it was a setup with Nginx. It was a setup with a lot of Lua code. It was a setup that no one was really comfortable maintaining when things went wrong, like they always do. It wasn't a very comfortable place to be, the one sitting in the chair having to debug and maintain that code. The second big thing that was a problem with the old setup was observability. So we had a lot of content being delivered, a lot of customers, and we could never really know what was going on in our system. So we had, of course, as network people, you know, you have a lot of information from other parts of the system, like you know how the network is behaving, but we didn't know exactly what was going on for the customer as a consumer of video accessing that content. So observability on the at the video delivery layer was missing. Resilience was also kind of a problem. It worked well enough again, but it was not ideal. So when things go wrong, as they always do, it wasn't very intelligent dealing with that sort of failure. So that was the point where we wanted to make things better. And then we have like the more special parts of it that deal with our scaling of the system. So our traffic is very spiky, and it's also very power law distributed. So we need some sort of intelligence to deal with that. And this is like a little bit of a graphical idea, to get a graphical idea of what I'm talking about. So we have on this left side systems that can, from one second to the other, have like really high peaks in interactivity from customers. And on the other side, we have, for instance, customers that are watching one thing, and the last, in the next second, basically all customers migrate to a different channel because Tagesschau ended and Tatort began. So you have a very small window of time where a lot of traffic gets shifts around and changes. So the system has to be able to deal with that in an intelligent fashion. All right, so let's write a CDN. And now I present you the very first AI-generated image on this talk, a map of Germany, which is surprisingly successful for an AI-generated map. Don't ask me what the lines are about. I have no idea. That's the context. What we had is some POPs around Germany. We decided to build it with Go. Again, I'm a gopher, so it's easy for me to say that I decided to build it with Go. You maybe would have come to other conclusions depending on what your team setup is. For us, it felt like the right tool for the job. So we have these POPs spread around Germany. We have to deal with around 6 terabits per second of peak traffic. And we wanted to have, like, this is the baseline that we had to match. We wanted to have like 50 milliseconds RTT to 90% of our customers. Now, you may ask why 90% is kind of a weird low number, but you have to think that a lot of our customers, or a significant portion of our customers, is coming in through mobile networks and stuff. So that's a part of our customers that we kind of know that we don't have to target them specifically. They have other expectations of latency, delay, and whatever. So they're treated slightly different. So that's why the number is relatively low for the 90%. And on top of that, there's like a control plane that lives on our hyperscaler of choice, that lives around this CDN that's not running on the POPs, on the points of presence. So what do we have? Again, slight overview of how streaming works for those of you that have never taken a closer look into it. This is basically what a video stream looks like. It's that ingest thingy, the little satellite dish, is pushing content into a system that builds these video segments. So these are the files that are being downloaded via HTTP. Relatively simple. You have a live edge, so basically the latest segment that has been created up to the point, to any specific point in time. And a little bit behind that, you have the actual player playhead, so where the player is actually playing content. And the segments in between that is like the buffer that you have locally, right? And this is a single channel. So if you have people watching Tatort, they're all watching this same stream of segments, right? The content is the same, so everybody's accessing the same stream of segments. Most clients, most people are, in our case at least, living there in the live edge. So they're very close to it. They're watching live television. There's like this little wave breaking on our CDN. It's like people accessing the live content. There's it implies a sort of a low cache lifetime, right? If people are watching the live content, you can expect that an old segment is not as important for you or for your network as the one that has just been created. This is like the hotspot of your network. This also means that you should probably try to put, or we decided to put this on memory because it has a big churn. it doesn't make sense to put it on disk if a couple of seconds later it's going to be irrelevant anyway, or have a lower relevance. So we try to put it on memory. But that implies, in turn, that we can't just, you know, naively put all the content into all the nodes and just spread things around and go, okay, just shoot 200 NGINXs in front of it and let's be happy about it. It doesn't quite work. So the first thing that we have to start thinking about when building a CDN is how do we deal with the individual nodes. This is a schematic of how you should think of the distributing content into nodes. What are the constraints that we have? We have bandwidth, so each node has a certain fixed bandwidth. In our case, we're dealing right now, the current generation is 100 gigs NICs. They're could go faster, but you know, dealing with blast radius, so that's the sweet spot that we are right now. This is like the horizontal scaling of the nodes, so how many nodes do you need for a channel? Like the example of Tagesschau or Tatort for the German community here, a lot of people watch that, so you obviously need to put that on more nodes. You need to scale that around a bit. That's the one constraint you have. The other constraint is memory. So you can't just put, as we had in the slide before, everything on the same node, so you had to decide which content goes into which node. For those of you that remember university courses, this is kind of a bin packing problem or a linear optimization problem that you have to deal with here. And then there's the third constraint, is that you have to decide how to scale this thing, how to spread the content around, and you have to avoid the two constraints before, and also avoid that all your traffic or a significant part of your traffic is on a single node, so that if that one node goes down, 50% of your customers are sad. Right, so this is the constraints that we have in this space. And this picture represents a bit of a pathological cases, right? You have, like for instance, the one node on the left, you see that IRD needs more traffic for than a single node, so you have to spread it around two nodes. But the node on the left is underutilized when you're thinking about the cache, right? So this is a not ideal scenario. The one on the right, on the other hand, you have channels that are not filling up the bandwidth, but are filling up the cache, and you also have like a channel that is barely watched there, but is still taking up cache, right? And this is an important realization because as soon as you have one customer accessing a stream on a specific node, you're using up cache and you're potentially evicting content out of that that node, and causing issues for other customers also on that node. So just to visualize kind of the problem space here on the node level. But okay, with this kind of setup, you kind of solve the problem. Okay, how to distribute content on this network? Then you have to decide how to scale it on the next level. So what is the next level is external traffic. So you have customers coming to your CDN, and where should you send them? So you have a lot of POPs in there. Again, the little vintage television there. And the control plane that we mentioned earlier knows a lot of things about our infrastructure. It knows, for instance, the near live peering topology that we have. So it knows through BNB that you have on this one POP, we're peered with Stadtwerke so-and-so. And the customer's coming from that one, so we know, say, that's probably the best place to put it there. And it also knows that we have maybe better peering capacity with that Stadtwerke so-and-so on this one POP and not in the other one. So we take the closest or slash best POP by peering and capacity. Try to distribute it that way so that our peerings are loaded as evenly as possible, and the customer has the lowest latency as possible. But if you think back to the other slide about distributing content on nodes, you know that if you have a lot of content, you're going to end up in situations where you can't put the one little channel that is watched by 10 people in a whole country in all POPs. So we also have the case that you may land in the wrong POP, and then we have to transmit the traffic on our backbone and send it back out through some other POP. It's not ideal, but it's our choice to do it this way because we can have a little bit more eyes on what's going on and have a little bit more control over the path that our traffic takes until it reaches the end customer, right? So if it just sent it to some overflow, it would potentially have a longer path that we don't know. We have no way of knowing what's going on over there, so we decided to pass it over our network. Okay, so now we kind of solved the issue of incoming traffic, and we also have the issue of internal traffic. This little thing describes the issue that the ingest pops, so the little antenna sign we saw at the beginning, where the actual content gets delivered into our system, it is separate from the CDN pops, because you have different constraints, right? So the CDN pops need to be close to the ISPs, the ingest needs to be closer to the content providers, which doesn't always overlap, and it's easier to keep them separated in a lot of reasons for that, practical reasons for that. But you end up with the problem that, then you have to internally get all the content from a single place. When you scale your traffic, that means that you get more nodes. And if you don't think about it, again, if you just willingly put Nginx boxes in front of it, you end up hammering your origin systems behind that. And those systems, and you also increase the cross pop traffic, and those systems aren't as easy to scale. They're not very as easy to scale horizontally as a CDN is. So you have to find a way to scale the upper part without significantly impacting the lower one. And what we did is a multi-layer caching hierarchy in this CDN stack that deals with this exactly with this question, right? So you see this is in this little schematic that a customer watching IAD in one node is actually getting it from a different node on the same pop or a different pop, but trying to get it, trying to save the parts of the system that are not as easy to scale from getting that load. All right, cool. So we scaled the node, we scaled external traffic, we scaled the internal traffic, or at least we hope we did. So will it blend? To answer that, we have to verify what we did. And to verify what we did, how can we know if it's actually working? We go back to our favorite monitoring tool of choice, Prometheus. I hope you guys use it as well. There was a lot of state that was difficult to see before that suddenly pops up and is visible, because now it's super easy for us to add more metrics and to get at every step of the way specifically targeted into video streaming. We can know, this is the content that we're interested in. For instance, where are our customers in this time stream of live linear content? And this just mirrors or confirms what I talked about before, that a lot of our customers is at the live edge. And we have a long tail of people watching stuff that is older, but a lot of it is just the live edge. Most people just like to zap around and stay on the live edge. But this is super cool, but it's kind of basic, right? It's Prometheus. We love it, but it's basic. Now I have to do a little digression, and I hope I'm good on time. Yeah, I am good on time. And I have to talk about CMCD, our Lord and Savior CMCD. I don't think anyone heard about this before. You can try the show of hands. Had anyone heard about CMCD before? Yes, one hand, my boss. Great. This is a standard for player state reporting. So basically, this is telemetry standard for video, specifically for video, so for media content. The name is absurd, but anyway. This is for stuff like, this is the for the player to report to the CDN. This is the quality that I want to play. Like, this is surprisingly difficult information to know about or to derive just from CDN traffic, because you don't know what the player, like, you don't know if the player has a small screen, right? You know that you have super high quality content, and you know that the player may be accessing lower quality content, but you don't know if he wanted to do that. So with CMCD, you suddenly know this sort of thing. Or I just had a stream stall. You can try to derive that from bare CDN logs, but you're only seeing one side of the one side of the story. And with CMCD, the client is telling you, "Hey, I just had one, right? So I had to pause for 2 seconds or whatever." or I needed X seconds to even start playing, right? This is super important information for us. If you're doing live TV, you know the drill, like you're zapping around, and you don't want to spend 5 seconds just looking at a circle until your TV starts to show something, right? And this is also super easy because it's piggybacked on HTTP. This is also a very simple schematic thing because the actual requests are like super long and super cryptic names. But the basic is just like when the client requests something, it just sends on the query string or in an HTTP header information that it has. And there's a lot of, on the version one of the standard, there's a lot of information that can send. For instance, on this case, MSD is a real parameter that gets sent. Is the last question there. So how many seconds did I need to actually start playing the content? Super simple, super effective. And there's a typo there because actually it should be segment two, not segment one. My mistake. But as it's super simple, it also has a few blind spots, right? Like if a client just dies suddenly, you're not going to get the last request, so you may have like some tail end of information missing. There's some corner cases where you get not a perfect picture, but it's a definite improvement on just getting CDN logs. And also, super magic, you can do custom telemetry on this. It's kind of obvious that you can do this, just sending some arbitrary stuff with their requests, but it's important for us because it means that players, so the people that are writing actual video player code, they have a standard upon which they can work on, and it starts from the get-go that they think about this sort of problems, like what sort of custom telemetry the users of my player want to implement. And for us, it's stuff like Wi-Fi signal info or CPU info. And this gives us a lot more than just network monitoring. It gives us information, for instance, an ISP may be having issues, right? So you have rebufferings by ASN. Rebuffering is like the little stall that you get on your video player, right? So if you sit a little circle of doom, you have a rebuffer event, and that's what we can now see aggregated over all ASNs that we peer with. Or the one that I also talked about before, how many seconds did it start between clicking the button on my remote and actually seeing video, which is a pretty good thing over here. Looks half a second to a second. Or also interesting, the Wi-Fi signal strength on our clients. But this is all aggregated, right? This is very aggregated information. So it helps a lot, but it's still not ideal. So how can it go further? Enter ClickHouse. You can go with any tool of your choice. I just mentioned ClickHouse because I happen to be very satisfied with it, so I'm doing a little bit of free advertisement for them. There are other tools that do the job, but this is the one that we went with. So what do we actually do with it? This is a database. This is a column-based database used often for timeline databases. There's a better name for it. It escapes me now. And what we do with it is we collect telemetry on all and every single request that lands on our CDN, and we send it to ClickHouse. That's a lot of information. For instance, for every single HTTP request, we gather TCP level information, and we have like RTT information for every single request. And what you see here is a whole stream, someone actually watching television. You can accompany them through their voyage, watching this stream, and seeing how the RTT behaves along this stream. So this is drilling down pretty nicely. Or for instance, what also mentioned the slide before, Wi-Fi signal. Now we can suddenly actually correlate Wi-Fi issues in our customers with network issues, and we can easily tell, okay, our customers are having it. Is it a common thing that they have Wi-Fi issues? Is it a common thing that Wi-Fi issues cause RTT issues and video quality issues? So it opens a lot of doors, right? So with this, we can do super intelligent stuff. We can assist our clients on configuring how they, or the players, how they configure their streams. For instance, players are super intelligent when it comes to short-term decisions, right? Your internet, you're walking around with your mobile phone and watching YouTube. If you go into a cavern, it just kind of tries to adapt, but it doesn't have a long story of it. So if you're at home and we know that you have a poor connection, we're not going to even start to play on a higher quality. we know already that you may be kind of limited so that your overall experience is better. So we do also quality of experience-based monitoring. We can also help customer support a lot. So this opened the door to a lot of different stuff that is possible now that wasn't before. So, mission accomplished. What I can tell you what our key takeaways were. I hope I can also inspire you to have some takeaways on this talk. For us, it confirmed the idea that Go was a good pick for us because it landed on this very nice middle layer between too low level to high level. There is one big thing missing on that is a direct consequence of this decision. You can come talk to us later if you want to complain a bit about that, but all in all, we're very satisfied with it. The fact that we can add metrics to it and easily and do it basically every week, I think, add some new metric to get some new part of the system under the microscope that we hadn't before, help the development and help validate what we were doing during the whole process. Keeping it simple doesn't mean the code, like the code base is probably one of the most complex ones that we have in our company, but it's the decisions of trying to keep the failure scenario simple. Like if something goes wrong, again, back to the first slides, if something breaks, just keep it easy so that you can reason about it. It was a very, very good decision considering the very few problems that we have after we deployed this system. And the last one that is missing there is, just to go over it again, telemetry, all the things. If you get a chance to put more stuff, I think I'm probably preaching to the choir, but you know, put more visibility into all parts of your stack whenever you can. And with that, that's all I have for you, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Leo, for your presentations. We've got 2 minutes for questions. Are there any questions in the room, or do we have questions from the internet?
Patrick was not kidding. I only see light.
Nope. I don't see
light.
So, thank you. There's one.
One question? Okay. Oh, yeah.
Freddy from Init7. Can you go back a few slides to the buffer by ASN?
You mean this one?
Yeah, rebuffering by ASN traffic. I mean, just publish the numbers of all the ISPs with these graphs, and then you have a perfect quality of the ISPs. So this is my suggestion.
Yeah. It's a bit difficult to do that without stepping on some toes, but yes.
Well, maybe there are some toes which are asking to be stepped on.
Yes.
Maybe not.
Yes.
That's up to you. So, thank you.
Thank you all.